The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus is the new film from director, animator, storyteller Terry Gilliam. And if you know his work, you also know he is a one-of-a-kind filmmaker with one-of-a-kind performances, a one-of-a-kind visual sense in really all of his movies. I mean, his roots go back to the early days of Monty Python. Gilliam made the legendary film Brazil, one of my favorites, also 12 Monkeys, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, Jabberwocky, many others. But if you don't know Gilliam's work, how many films have you seen begin with a statement like this from the director?
Hello, I'm Terry Gilliam, and I have a confession to make. Many of you are not going to like this film.
That's Gilliam, the director, talking about his last film, Tideland.
This film is seen through the eyes of a child. If it's shocking, it's because it's innocent. So I suggest you try to forget everything you've learned as an adult, the things that limit your view of the world, your fears, your prejudices, your preconceptions, and don't forget to laugh.
Terry Gilliam joins us now in our studios. And while your new film, The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, does not come with a disclaimer, it does feel like the camera's lens is the eye of a child.
Yes, I know. Children, you know, are surprised daily. The world is still being formed in their heads in front of them. Adults grow up and they structure the world. They try to make sense out of it. And I think they close the windows and doors that make life interesting. So I try to open those.
Well, the fable, and often your stories, your films, are like a fable that's massively elaborated visually with all kinds of stylistic and special effects and that sort of thing. In this particular case, you've got Christopher Plummer playing a kind of angelic, godlike character, and Tom Waits playing a devil character. And Plummer is the carrier of the stories in the world, and the devil is somehow opposed to all of that. Explain that tension to me.
It's actually not quite. It starts at one point in back thousands of years earlier, where Parnassus is claiming to have been a monk and telling the eternal story. And then Tom Waits, the devil, turns up and seals everybody's mouth in his monastery, and suddenly the world continues to turn. That's actually about Parnassus's ego, that he actually, his stories are the ones that keep the world turning. What he learns is that all the stories are what keep the world turning, and I think that's what it is. I think we live by stories. They're the things that inform us, define the way, what we think is the world, so that we get through the next day.
And in this particular story, it centers around a strange, crazy, wonderful circus and a mirror through which people can go and actually experience their dreams. Listen.
Excuse me, but how does this work? What does it cost?
Cost? No, the Imaginarium does not cost a thing. We're not here for money.
How long does it take?
Well, that depends, my dear.
I'm running late.
Oh, late, late for a very important date. Gosh, I can't tell you how many times I've heard that in my life. Listen. Can I ask you a question? Do you dream? Or should I say, can you put a price on your dreams?
And of course, actor Heath Ledger, whose final performance is in this film. He's a personal friend of yours, and he really did an amazing job in this particular film. Before we talk about the fact that he died in the middle of production, what does he bring to this film?
Oh, I think Heath was so talented and so full of, I think, life and vitality and playfulness. So his character is a chameleon character that we think might save the day and then possibly turns out to be worse than the devil himself. And it just, Heath, before he died, had basically set the basis of this character, and he never had the chance to, you know, explore all the possibilities that he had begun. And it took three other actors to do the exploration, Johnny Depp, Colin Farrell, and Jude Law.
And you've worked with Johnny Depp before. And I imagine at the end of the film, it says Heath Ledger and friends made this movie. These actors are a part of that group of friends, right?
Well, that was it. When Heath died, and we actually decided that possibly we could salvage the film and make it work, I just started calling close friends of his. Because if we were going to have the character played by three other people, as we do, they had to understand Heath. They had to be close. So I just wanted to keep it family. And that it worked brilliantly, because when people see the film, they just assumed it was written to be done this way. It's seamless. And I remember Colin, when he was doing his part, he said at times he thought he was channeling Heath. So Heath's spirit just spread right through the entire production long after he was dead.
It seems this movie is kind of like a Baron Munchausen 2, and I actually really loved the movie Munchausen. Fisher King and Time Bandits were two of my other favorites.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely fantastic.
you seem to, in your movies, often warn us about the dangers of letting go of the childlike imagination. And I think of Fisher King very much the same way, of a realist learning from a guy who's very childlike in his imaginings.
I think my favorite fairy tale was always The Emperor's New Clothes, because everybody's caught up in this belief that the emperor's got a fabulous new outfit there, and he's stark naked, and it's only a child who sees the truth. And I think that's why whether either children, mad people, outsiders tend to usually have a better take on reality than most of us who are running desperately trying to keep up with the way the world goes.
You know, I have to ask this question. What is it with you and little people?
They make me feel tall.
Well, I mean, you are either the Nelson Mandela of little people and dwarfs, or you are the Jerry Lewis. I can't tell which one.
Well, I mean, it started in Time Bandits. I wanted to tell the movie from the perspective of a child, and I didn't think a kid could hold the movie together, so I invented a whole troupe of Time Bandits who were all played by dwarfs who had never been given a chance to play straight parts, to be actors. I said, well, Alan Ladd did it. Why can't you guys? He was only another few inches taller. And in Parnassus, we have Vern Troyer, 2'8". I love Vern because these guys have been dealt a very difficult hand of cards for life. And they've come through with grace and dignity and humor. And I love those kinds of people.
In the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, do you imagine such a mirror? Is filmmaking for you the mirror that you can walk through to experience your dreams?
It was when I was a kid. Film was just the thing that opened up these worlds to me. That I grew up in the countryside in Minnesota, and we had no television. It was just films were everything. And unfortunately, that mirror can become a lie as well. We live in an age with television, the media, all this imagery, which are supposed to be a kind of mirror to reality, and I find most of them are lying to us. So I open up the possibilities that can be many things and try to encourage people to invent their own reality, invent their own world, and not take the one that's being pumped down our throat.
Well, you wouldn't think of pumping a reality down our throat. Film director Terry Gilliam continues to invent his own world, his own worlds, and we continue to watch. Thank you so much, Terry Gilliam. Make sure you go to thetakeaway.org. We'll do a web extra video with Terry Gilliam. I want you to understand your visual sense. We're going to talk about the early days at Monty Python. And while you're at our website watching that, you can take our podcast to go. Subscribe now at thetakeaway.org.
We're talking today about the new year. What do you think is going to be the big story of 2010? The recession over, Gitmo closed, healthcare passed? Give us your prediction at 8778-MY-TAKE or send us an email to mytake@thetakeaway.org. Here's your takeaway.
Bright lights of Denver are shining like diamonds.
A little better than John Denver.
That's better. Yeah.
That's Willie Nelson welcoming our new listeners in Denver. They're listening KUVO. Welcome to the Takeaway family.
Hello, Denver. I'm John Hockenberry.
I'm Celeste Headley. This is the Takeaway.
And you're judged by the look in your eye. She saw him that evening in a tavern in town.